Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. Books.
Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm. My guest is Susan Orlean. The book is called The Library Book. It's a great title. I don't know how many of you had the same feeling I had for library books. There were so many ceremonies and rituals surrounding going to the library, bringing books back on time, getting the next book in whatever the series was, or those elaborate times when you could ask the library to get a book it didn't have from another library. Here was this place. You could get anything. And Susan writes in her first chapter that when she was bringing her son to the library for the first time, she remembered going to the library with her mother for the first time. Remember that for me.
I had a moment when my son was assigned a school project when he was in first grade to talk to a civil servant. And to my surprise, he wanted to talk to a librarian. I took him to the branch library here in Los Angeles. We had just moved here. When I walked into the room with him, there was something about the quality of the air in the room, the sounds of a library, the feeling of a library, the light coming into the library that immediately reminded me of all of those trips that I always took with my mom. My mom used to take me to the library, to the branch library near our house in Cleveland, several times a week because I loved it so much. And there was this feeling of excitement and anticipation. And then we'd walk in together, and it was a place that was unlike any other place. It wasn't like going into a store. It was bounty. I could have anything. There probably was some limit to how many books you could take out, but that wasn't the sensation. The feeling was everything in the world you could dream of is here, and you can have it all. It was something that I hadn't thought about in many, many, many years, and going with my son brought that memory back so powerfully, and I began to think, boy, this meant so much to me. What is it about libraries that is so special? And it stuck in my mind, and I kept thinking, God, I'd like to write a book about libraries. What will that book be? But it was percolating in my head ever since that visit.
And you had moved to Los Angeles, where we were the unhappy victims of the largest library fire ever in the United States. How many volumes
It's an amazing tally. 400,000 books were destroyed, completely destroyed.
Not to mention those that were damaged.
700,000 were damaged. Say 400,000 books are destroyed. You have to somehow get 700,000 books out of this burned building, pack them up, find cold storage for 700,000 books. And that's because mold will bloom in a book within 48 hours if it gets wet. And the concern was these would all get moldy and there's no recovery from mold.
And remind me, how hot did it ultimately get?
It reached over 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit. In the stacks, which are really like chimneys, the way the books were stored, these less frequently circulated books, they're in these narrow compartments that really served like chimneys. So the fire got started and then just went to town. In fact, the fire burned for over 7 hours. So 7 hours raging inside these chimney stacks, basically, and they had endless amounts of fuel to just keep getting hotter and hotter and hotter.
Yes, in the library book, what a great title, Susan Orlean manages to take us through that fire. The opening chapter on libraries is like a pastoral. The extraordinary thing here is a department store where you can take anything home for free. Then a chapter in which we're, as if we're naughty children, we're warned that for years they've been told that the downtown library is a fire hazard, is a fire hazard, is a fire hazard. What are you going to do? No one knew what to do because the building was so beautiful, was considered to be so beautiful, that there would always be a huge debate between replacing the building and repairing the building, and they would eventually
repair, which was, this was a debate that went on for more than 20 years in the city, because the building is absolutely beautiful, was built in the 1920s. It was very quickly inadequate in size. I mean, Los Angeles grew so exponentially that what had been a very comfortably sized library in 1920 was very quickly too small for a city that exploded in the 40s and 50s.
A great chapter, you know, really better than anything in Under the Volcano, and I mean it, describing books burning and the history of book burnings. The young man thought to have been the prime suspect comes from not 40 miles away, and he comes from one of those towns that are right in the middle of Los Angeles. What is it called?
It was called Santa Fe Springs.
Santa Fe Springs.
And it's one of these towns that it looks a little bit like it had been assembled off-site and then flown in and deposited in the middle of desert.
Susan Orlean, the author of the library book, it's published by Simon & Schuster. What a depiction of the boredom of the small town and the need to escape it, and the weirdness of being the odd man out in your family. He seems to have been quite a case, liar, perpetual liar, obsessive liar. But many of us have that problem when we're young.
Mm-hmm.
I did. And his parents just assumed that most of the stories he told were false, which was nothing compared to his sisters and brothers. They knew. They didn't assume. They knew his stories were false. And it seems as if he just liked the idea of having been in the fire and having had a handsome fireman. He used the phrase again and again.
Yeah.
He'd recently sort of come out, to the extent that you can come out in a small town.
And at that time, which was, late 70s, early 80s, it wasn't an easy thing to come out.
And to come out of a fire in the arms of a handsome fireman, this for a young man who just applied and failed to become a member of the Santa Monica Fire Department. So he had a certain thing for firemen. And, well, you know, before long, he gets cast in the role of chief suspect.
He had an incredible desire for attention. And I think most of his fibs and fabrications were designed to make it seem like his life was much more exciting than it was. Most of us, I think, would understand, even if we wanted attention, that you don't want attention for committing a massive destructive felony like an arson fire. And yet he confessed not only to his friends, but to the fire department as well, that he had done it. And then only when the seriousness of what he was saying, I think, really dawned on him.
When he got arrested.
Yes.
And taken to jail, he had no idea that you could be arrested for just lying.
Right, exactly. I think that it was, it shocked him. And, you know, you would think somebody with who was a bit more sensible would say, you know, you don't, it's like you don't joke around about bombs when you're at the airport. When there's been a huge fire in the city you live in, you don't boast to people that you started it.
When I was a boy, my mom's favorite book was A Tree Grows in Brooklyn. And in that book, the heroine, Francie, wants to read all of the books in her branch library, and she reads them in alphabetical order. Well, I tried that too, because we had a very small branch library. It was just a storefront. A person could conceivably read the books in alphabetical order. So this book, the library book by Susan Orlean, is full of so many things that are so close to my heart that I read it really overnight. It's a wonderful book. On top of it, you know, the way they talk about a mystery wrapped in an enigma, it's a mystery story too. Now, I'm not going to tell you whether or not the mystery gets solved, but everything that can be done, Susan Orlean's does. She finds the young man, Harry is his name. She finds the sisters. She talks to them. You know, this. If she were to solve this mystery of the probably the biggest catastrophe L.A. has ever known, she would be world famous.
I ended up learning a lot about arson, which is in itself a fascinating topic. And it is an incredibly difficult thing to investigate arson. It's the least successfully prosecuted felony.
It destroys its evidence.
It's in a way, it's, I mean, not that I'm recommending it, but it is a perfect crime. It's one of those things where you the weapon itself can be destroyed in the conflagration. So there is often no evidence at all. And in the case of a fire that burned for 7 hours at temperatures over 2,000 degrees, you can imagine how difficult it was to investigate.
The librarians vacated and stood outside, many of them in tears. The firemen could only spend 10 minutes in rotation before they had to leave in the terrible heat. And what an extraordinary scene it is to imagine, because downtown Los Angeles comes and goes and comes and goes geographically. It's now, you know, in one of its high periods,
right.
People are living there again. But then?
I would say in the mid-80s, it was really in a low point. And the businesses, a lot of businesses had left.
Closed.
There was a lot of vacancy down there. And there was even a question of whether there was any point in having a library downtown. There weren't a lot of people living downtown. There really was a feeling that L.A. had hollowed out in the middle and there wasn't much life in the center of the city.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. You're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking with Susan Orlean about her fabulous book, The Library Book. We'll continue after this short break.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, this is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Susan Orlean about her book, The Library Book, which examines the Central Los Angeles Public Library fire disaster catastrophe and explores, while appreciating, the cultural concept of libraries, the kind of people who become librarians. Are libraries themselves, after all, there are things worse than fires. Culture itself. Are libraries still libraries? Are they still places now that books can be easily gotten on your computer?
And it's been a debate over the last, say, 10 or 20 years, ever since the existence of the internet and ultimately the development of electronic books and so forth, which is there a meaning to a library? Is there a purpose? Do we need them? Or can we simply get what we need online? And I would say the answer is a resounding yes, we need them and want them.
And want them and feel emotionally connected to them. And the thing that interests me, you see, I have many friends who chose to go to library school. And yes, library school is no longer the place it once was for the bookish. You know, those people who could tell you the books other than Little Women and Joe's Boys and Little Men that Louisa May Alcott wrote. They can tell you what her father wrote. They, you know, the book experts, no. Information experts and how information is communicated and how we store it and how we retrieve it.
And what's interesting, and I think part of the way that librarianship has been reinvented, is it's the idea of information coupled with a sense of social service, the idea that there is a huge amount of information in the world, and in any library, there is a vast amount of information. How do you get it, and how do you help people access the knowledge that a library has? So I think there's been, I'm happy to say, it seems like there's a giant revival in interest in being a librarian. It's changed a lot. It's attracting younger people. It's attracting a mixture of men and women, whereas for a very long time it was had become a female profession for whatever reason.
A female profession, while the city librarian, so-called, was fairly consistently an eccentric man like Charles Lummis.
Yes.
An adventurer, yes.
There seemed to be a lot of men running libraries, whereas most of the staff was female. And L.A. had an occasion that I wrote about at length because it was so fascinating. L.A. had women running the library early on, which was unusual, and they had a lot of
wonderful
strong
women, suffragettes and feminists, people of conviction, strong conviction.
And they were, at the time, it was unusual to have a city department run by a woman. In 1905, the woman running the library was this wonderful character named Mary Jones, who was a very forward-thinking, intelligent woman. And then the Board of Library Commissioners called her in one day for a meeting and said, you know, we all agree that it would be best to have a man run the library, so we'd like you to resign. Her answer was no. And thus began the Great Library War in L.A.
The Great Library War.
A piece of L.A. history that I was delighted to learn about, where women rallied thousands of women march in the streets in support of her because no reason was given except we think everyone would agree we should have a man running the library. Well, not everyone agreed. And this ended up being a stalemate. Susan B. Anthony came to town to support Mary Jones. Women were marching in the street and holding rallies. Eventually, the city attorney got involved, and this was well before there was any protection in the workplace for gender discrimination. And he simply said, well, the city can hire and fire whoever they want, whenever they want. They don't need a reason. So this is perfectly legitimate. And Mary Jones, finally, after holding out for a good long time, accepted the decision of the city attorney and left. And the library was taken over by a singular character, Charles Lummis.
His descendants still live here. One of them, Suzanne Lummis, is a poet living in Los Angeles, doing readings all the time and telling me from time to time about her family.
It's an amazing story. He was a remarkable figure, a very, really an iconic California figure who did everything from, he walked across the country when he was first hired to work at the LA Times, ran the library for 5 years, made a lot of changes in the library. He was a poet. He was a translator of a lot of important Spanish language texts.
He was interested in Mayan culture.
I would say he had great interest in indigenous people, but he was not very good on female issues.
He's ugly when it comes to it. Now, I want to put the book aside for a second to point out that libraries have not stopped being centers of controversy. Right now, in Los Angeles, our Aloud series, the head of Aloud, Louise Steinman, has been asked to step down. And now at the Aloud series, people are protesting the request that she leave because for 20 years, 25 maybe, she did such a fantastic, fantastic job. And the library, true to the form that you present in your book, is refusing to say why she was fired. They just told her she's fired. And they say we have a change of direction.
Libraries are they're fascinating institutions because they are open to everything and everyone. So they always they are often full of controversy, whether it's fighting over a banned book or providing services to undocumented immigrants or having their own internal struggles, whatever they may be. We feel an ownership in libraries that makes each of these things feel very fundamental to us. It's not happening in some business that we don't have a connection to, but it's our library and our
library, yes. And there, our library is a part of our heart. Mm-hmm. And I remember I have so many strong feelings because as a child, what are you given to have strong feelings about? Well, among my strongest was the fact that the Oz books were thought of as series books and libraries didn't carry series books. And my mother, bless her soul, would take me to the downtown Manhattan 42nd Street Library where they had in the children's room the original with color plates first edition reference of all of the Oz books.
How wonderful.
Was I in heaven. From childhood on, the library is where you go for all of your deepest loves, avocations, strangenesses, to have a home.
And this is why I think this was so evocative for me. The idea of our investment, our emotional connection to libraries, the fact that they are the repository of our stories, of who we are as a culture, who we are as individuals, and the fact that we make it available for everybody and anyone to share makes it really unlike any place else that exists. I have yet to meet anybody who doesn't swoon a little when they think about going to the library, especially when they were a kid.
Libraries have become safe places for homeless people, and there's a lot of argument and thought about that.
Yeah.
What do we do? And, well, I want to really thank Susan Orlean. I've read all of her books because I spoke to her about her biography of Rin Tin Tin. And now the library book. Since I've read all of them, I can tell you this is her best book. I loved
it.
I loved reading it. It's wonderfully written.
Thanks.
You've done so much arresting work to make each chapter be a source of its own excitement. I mean, each chapter is burning.
I love the pun. It was a joy to write, and I tried to touch on what the library, day-to-day life of the library today, its history, and this catastrophe that was really profound in the city.
Susan Orlean, thank you for joining us and being among This is among the first shows about the book, so I'm thrilled to be able to present it to the audience, which I'm sure will love it. Audiences for a show called Bookworm,
they're
going
people.
To be reading the library book by my guest, Susan Orlean.
Thank you, Michael. Well, it's my joy to be here, and I appreciate it so much, and it really means a lot to me.
The library book is published by Simon & Schuster. You can visit kcrw.com/bookworm for a podcast of today's show. You can hear it all over the place. It's available at Apple and Spotify and wherever you get your podcasts. You can even listen on demand in your local library with KCRW smartphone apps. Special thanks to my co-producer and assistant, Sean Sullivan. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. I'm Michael Silverblatt. My guest has been the wonderful Susan Orlean. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
A bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm when Eileen Miles is our guest.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.